Pierre McGuire, brought to you by Montreal's messiest sandwich, Dagwood's Chili Dag, with pepperoni, cheese, peppers, onions. Dagwood's famous chili and sauce comes with a bib.
And I should point out, that was Sergio Momesso and Bob McKenzie, of course, this morning on TSN 690 with Connor McKenna, Sean Starr, and Rick Moffitt. How you doing, Pierre?
I'm good. I just want to say one thing, because you know I usually never disagree with Bob.
Yeah.
I would say that Mark Bergevin definitely had a hand in that contract that PK got, and the biggest reason why, and I told you when they did it, he never, ever should have got a bridge contract. And that was management's decision. And that was a big mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I told you that at the time. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. No, you harped on that for quite a while. So, because there
that
is this.
Now, listen, it's not Bobby's job to know. I mean, that's a lot of years back. But I'm telling you, I remember telling you, this will cause huge problems for this team. It was a major mistake because internally they didn't judge the player properly and they didn't evaluate where salaries were going. They haven't made a lot of mistakes. I'm telling you, they have not. That was one.
Well, that's debatable, and maybe we'll get to that in a few minutes, but I know you felt strongly about it. But so the common held belief was they went through the arbitration proceeding, and where it can often get nasty, and then they reached a deal because Jeff Molson did step in. You're saying that's not quite that Mark Bergevin was ready to...
Jeff definitely stepped in. He's the owner of the team. I told you this a million times, too. Let's remember, there's no general manager that makes those deals without ownership signing off on them. Because it's not the general manager's money. It's like I've told you a million times as well. When they ask you the question in the interview, what are you going to do with Scott Gomez? I'm going to do whatever you're going to permit me to do. But if you allow me to buy the player out, I'm buying him out. Because we need the cap relief. We need to move forward here. He's not making our product better.
Which is what they did.
Exactly. But do you think they could do that without ownership's blessing? No chance. So you can't have it one way on the buyout and have it another way on the contract. Do you understand what I'm saying?
So do you believe that Mark Bergevin wanted to get a deal done as badly as Jeff Molson did and the two of them worked to get it done? Or do you think Bergevin was ready to go through and take what the arbitrator would decide and go from there?
I couldn't tell you, and I would never want to speculate on that because I just don't know. And so that's really unfair. Anybody that tries to speculate on that without inside information is making a big mistake. I would never do that.
Because that just kind of adds to the overall feeling that maybe not everybody associated with the Montreal Canadiens feels as strongly about PK Subban as many fans do and many members of the media do and many other members of the organization perhaps do.
Okay. Let's just cut to the chase right now. Carey Price is the best player in the Montreal Canadiens. Do you agree with me on that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Best player in the league.
Okay, we agree on that. He's the most influential player on his team for the entire league. I agree with you on that. Who's the face of the franchise?
It's PK.
Correct. The Montreal Canadiens have 22,000 seats to fill every night. They need a face to sell those seats. It's not just the team. They need a face.
So we come back to what Sergio said this morning, right?
Yeah.
I think he's sticking around Mr. PK Subban. He's too valuable. He's too popular with this club. And people got to deal with it.
Pierre, you've probably been in...
He's a smart guy, Sergio. He's a street smart guy. He gets it. He's in the community. He knows.
You've been probably around, I don't know how often you frequent the Times Square area, but the NHL store. If you went into the NHL store, mm-hmm. which I've done once... But if you go in there mm-hmm. and you try, you know, you try to get a definitive answer on jerseys, you could probably even look this up. As great as Carey Price is, 76 Canadians, that's it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
No, that's right. That's right. In New York, though, you might get a few because Pacioretty's from New Canaan, Connecticut. You might get a few more than you think from the Jersey, New York, Connecticut area on Pacioretty. Mm-hmm. But outside of that... It's PK all the time. This reminds me of in Minnesota, and I only know it because I was up for the job there. The number one selling jersey they had at that time was not Mikko Koivu and wasn't Marian Gaborik. It was 22 Cal Clutterbuck. He was popular with the fans. He was extremely popular because of the way he played. The same thing can be said about Subban.
So do you, you know, we only played a portion. All three of the gentlemen in question spoke for you know, Michel Therrien spoke for 12 minutes. Max Pacioretty spoke for 6.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. PK spoke for about 7 minutes as well. Right. So I don't know how much of it you saw or heard other than those clips I played.
No, I just heard the clips.
They were all very relaxed.
Yep.
Very confident. At times amused. So they handled this well with this kind of anticipation, and they all handled it well. The question a lot of us have is how much we believe what they said.
Prior preparation prevents potential problems. Never forget that phrase. They were not properly prepared for the press conference the other night in Colorado. Remember how I told you need to have a debrief? They were probably in a hurry because they had to catch a charter to get home, to get for their game tonight against Philadelphia. What time did they get home yesterday? 4 o'clock in the morning?
That's right.
Okay. So you know, because of time zones and everything else, they're hustling. They skipped. I'm willing to bet, even though I don't know, I'm willing to bet that they skipped a phase of their post-game preparation. All of them. Because they were in a hurry. And this is what you get. And that's why that can never be allowed to happen. Ever. And I learned that over time, too, because I used to be part of it, and I made some mistakes doing it, too. That can't happen. That's just part of professional protocols that you have to establish as a team. So why do you think they were all singing from the same songbook today? You don't think that Donald Beauchamp and Dominic Saint had a session with these guys before they addressed the media?
Of course.
Of course they did. Prior preparation prevents potential problems.
Where is that from? That's an alliteration exercise there.
The great Al Arbor.
Al Arbor?
The great Al Arbor, wow. Who told that to his trainer, Ron Waski, who was our trainer at St. Lawrence. And Ron used to call him the 5 P's of Polish power. And I love Ronnie Waski to this day. Yeah. He used to write on, and we used to win a lot there. We won a lot there at St. Lawrence. And he used to write on the board before every game, winning is fun. And boy, oh boy, did we have fun. And we won a lot.
So as convincing as he was, that doesn't ring true that if any other player had mucked up like that in his eyes, that he wouldn't have singled him out after the loss.
I don't know that.
Michel Therrien.
I don't know that.
Well, we can go on 57 games prior to this, and
that's what I'm saying. I don't know that. I'm going to take him at his word, but I don't know that. Right. So I can't comment any further than saying I don't know that to be true.
Would you say it's a common occurrence where a coach gets talked out of sending a message that he may have wanted to send initially?
In terms of what he said today, Rod?
Yeah, like in one of these meetings, one of these debriefs, whether it's after a game or after a practice.
Are you talking specifically the other night in Colorado?
Yeah.
Go to it.
Had that briefing, is it possible that they did in fact have it, Pierre? And Terry said, no, I want to get this out there, and that's why he repeated it in English.
And then that could have happened. Again, this is all speculative. That could have happened, and that's where the assistant coaches have to say, no, you can't do it. Trust us. We're your backbone. We're here. We have a feel for this. We're saving you from this. Do not do it.
Yeah, but
we
they
have
don't
a quick
really.
Turnaround. We cannot afford to have this stuff going on in the media when we get back to play Philly. This was a non-conference game, a non-division game. Now we're hitting the skids with big-time games, division games, conference. That's where you have to show your moxie as an assistant coach. And it's not always popular, and sometimes it can get very physical. Trust me, I've been in those meetings too. But you've got to do it. That's one of those unwritten rules for assistants. Sometimes you got to save the head coach from himself.
But you said they have experience, but they don't have experience as a head coach.
No.
So, you know, maybe that's...
But again, that's where you have to do that. You have to do it.
Jay?
Pierre, listening to both Therrien and PK speak today, there's obvious philosophical differences when, in retrospect, when they look back at the play, and there's a distinct difference on how they described what exactly happened. Is there a continuing kind of war of attrition between the two, where you have PK out there, he's quoting Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, and he's saying, we got to go out there, and I got to go get it, and at the same time, Michel Therrien is preaching that you have to be responsible defensively. Is there a cold war between the two that PK just doesn't seem to want to play into Michel Therrien's way, his process as he describes it?
There could be. If I were around the Canadians, I would tell you this. I wouldn't want PK to change one iota. The only thing I'd want him to do, and I believe he learned this in Sochi, is manage the clock. If you're tied or you're behind in a game like that, I think you get super aggressive for that player. Every player's got different rules for that kind of situation. But if you have a one-goal lead and you're making that play on the road, no. So you got to manage the minutes. You got to understand the clock. And that's where I think coaching really comes in. And that's why situational coaching in practice, Jay, more than anything else, matters a ton. You practice your guys first minute of a game or a period, last minute of a period, last 3 minutes of a game. You're down by a goal last 3 minutes. What are you going to do? You're up by a goal last 3 minutes. What are you going to do? You're tied in the game. What are you going to do? Situational coaching on the ice in practice has to happen. I don't know if the Canadians do it or not. Like I say all the time, I feel terrible because I want to see them practice. I don't get a chance to because I'm traveling around the league. And when I watch them practice, it's game day skates when I'm doing their games, and that's totally different. It's just to get your blood flowing. But situational practice drills really matter a lot.
You know, Arpan Basu of NHL.com was with us about an hour ago, and he pointed out something I think a lot of us were thinking as we were watching the game develop, and they did play well. They responded, and it looked at the very least that they might get a point. Mm-hmm. PK is trying to make something happen before the buzzer goes off at the 60-minute mark.
Correct.
Because you know what's coming 3-on-3, right?
Correct. Well, you know you're getting McKinnon, you're getting Duchesne, and you're getting a whole lot of Tyson Berry, so buckle up.
And so I think PK deserves a little more credit in this regard.
Correct. We agree.
That he knew exactly where it was in the game, and he had the puck on his stick, and he tried to win it. That's it.
We agree. I give Greg, you know what, as much as everybody wants to blame PK, and I told you yesterday, and Ray Ferraro told you the same thing, we both make our living in the NHL, Jacob Delarose and Max Pacioretty aren't innocent on that thing. They're not just standing there watching. They're not innocent. They're part of the play. But I would also say this, Grigorenko, who is not known for his defense, did a real good job keeping PK to the outside. That's not an easy guy to contain in that situation. I give Grigorenko a lot of credit on the play as well.
So if a coach and a player have completely different interpretations of situational awareness, how do you reconcile that?
I would say the manager. I'd say the manager has to get involved in that, and not with the player around. The manager just has to talk to the coach and say, listen, I understand where you are. I also understand that this guy is a very important part of our team in terms of manufacturing offense. We're not the best team in the league at scoring 5-on-5. We need him to be an offensive catalyst. That's one of the reasons why we're paying him what we're paying him. I don't expect you to worry about his salary. That's the other thing. If I ever ran a team, I don't want my coaches to know what any of the players make, even though I know they'll know. To them, it shouldn't matter. It's not their job. That's my job. That's why there's a chain of command. I don't need you to know what a player makes if you're the coach of the team. If I need you to know that, I'll tell you. You coach the players that you're given. And if you think that those players can't help you, come and meet with me, and we'll talk about it. But my job's to sign the players. Your job's to coach them. Don't worry about how much they make.
I don't see myself as a selfish player, you know. I mean, Michael Jordan's got a quote, you know, he can accept failure, but he doesn't accept not trying, you know. And I think that he's a pretty good athlete, pretty good competitor, and a champion. And you know, there's other quotes where he talks about, you know, for all the shots that he missed, or for all the shots that he made, there were 1,000 that he missed, you know, and for all the game-winning shots that he's had, there's a ton that he didn't, you know, score.
There's PK today.
That's well said.
And so beginning tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers on home ice, and I know you're going to say he's got a lot of character and a lot of stuff does roll off his back, but how does he play the game that he wants to play if the coach doesn't want him to play his game?
Well, he's going to be uptight tonight. I don't care. He can say anything he wants, try to spin it any way he wants. There's no way he's not uptight tonight. This is like a playoff game for him. And I think you're going to see a lot of focus. You're not going to see a lot of talking. And I would expect that he's going to respond to the challenge. He's been there before. He's played in a lot of big ones before. 08 World Junior in part of beats of the gold medal game. 09 World Junior playing against the Americans New Year's Eve and the Russians coming from behind and then playing against the Swedes in the gold medal game. He's been in big games, being in Sochi at the Olympics. He's seen it. He's danced in a lot of these big dances. But I would expect tonight he's going to have a playoff focus to his game.
All right, before we run out of time.
Kadri in a good defensive position. And now a penalty coming up. Look out here. Komarov clipped McDonough, who's just back from a concussion. He clipped him with the shoulder right in the side of the face.
It's a hit that we're trying to get rid of. And, you know, we can't be having guys, you know, taking runs like that. And for our group to be able to respond the way we did and come out with 2 points is huge.
Derek Stepan, after the Rangers beat the Maple Leafs, that was Chris Cuthbert and Ray Ferraro, of course, on the Komarov kind of chicken wing there on McDonough, who just came back.
Yeah.
And he got suspended today for 3 games.
Yeah, for 3. That's a step forward because there have been some other guys that have been let off the hook, starting with Ronaldo right at the beginning of the year against Sean Couturier, which I've told you about a million times. They let the, you know, the baby out with the bathwater on that one. That should have been a suspension right away. Gudas has obviously gotten away with some stuff. But, no, that's the appropriate call based on the fact that he had never been suspended before or fined before. I'll tell you one thing about Komarov. He's a hard-edged, hard-hitting, very productive player. But when I see that left elbow get extended on the way through the hit, that's not good. That's not good. And he's paying for it.
So a couple of days.
The Rangers are paying worse.
Yeah.
Because they don't have their guy. He is their guy. McDonough is their guy.
A couple of days ago, Pierre, I was wondering, other than John Tortorella, in light of Gerald Gallant getting tossed over the weekend, when was the last NHL coach to get thrown out of a game?
Set, because you work with these guys every day, and you care about them. You care about their lives and their families, and Brian Little's getting his neck x-rayed, and I seem to be considerably more concerned about the result of that hit than anyone else.
There's video and photographs circulating out there of the referee laughing after he threw.
Yeah, you're not doing me any favors here. I understand you got a job to do, but I think that would then have been consistent with their overall demeanor regarding the whole incident.
Paul Maurice, Pierre,
first of all, I'll defend Paul on some part of this. I think the other thing he's trying to do, which he doesn't say in that soundbite, and I don't know if he said any other time, his team was stinky off the start. They were down 3-0 and they were down 4-1. They were stinky. I watched it, and he knows it, and the team knows it, and he was probably frustrated. And Strawman, who is by far the most probably gentlemanly defenseman in the league, he is not a dirty player by any stretch. That was set up, that first hit was set up because of the tracking by Victor Hedman on Brian Little. And that's when Brian Little went down. Strawman was already engaged for the hit. So Little's head goes down, and unfortunately for Strawman, he runs into it. That's not Strawman's fault, unfortunately. I think Little felt the back pressure from Hedman, and that's why he crumpled down, and then the hit comes. It's unfortunate but fair. And Strawman's not suspended, and there was no penalty on the play, and justifiably so. But the player got hurt. That's terrible. You don't want to see that. But the Nikolaj Ehlers thing, that was a good play. That was a good play by Strawman on Nikolaj Ehlers. Tremendously good play.
But in light of what we heard, Paul Maurice, and they're concerned about Little, he's having his neck x-rayed, and he knows, he saw it today, and he knows, I understand why. But for the referee, Francois St. Laurent, to kind of goad him into Well, they were staring each other down, were they not?
Yeah, they were, but what did Paul say to him?
Well, I can't repeat what he said.
Well, of course not. So there's one side of the story. I'm sticking up for and you know how much I love the coaches. But I'm down.
But you think
there
he should be? You think at the tail end of this, he should be laughing at him, the referee?
No, that part I agree. No, but again, I don't know. I wish I had been there to have heard, because I would have reported what was being said. But I didn't. I wasn't there, so I don't know. But I can assure you that Paul wasn't saying, "Oh, Francois, you're such a nice guy, and I'm sorry you missed the call."
No, he said you effing choked, and he said...
And a few other things,
yeah,
probably.
Repeatedly. I understand that.
Yeah,
referee,
so
he should have been
point.
Thrown out of the game. I get that part. I don't understand a referee. A referee, much like what we saw with Brad Watson and Brandon Prust, you're supposed to take the temperature of the game and lower it.
Right. And maybe that was his way to try to lower it by smiling. I don't know. And maybe he made a mistake. Again, I don't know what was said. And you never know. He may have said something else that St. Laurent didn't want to fight back with him on. But the one thing I started by saying, and I'll finish by saying, they were stinky at the start. They were down 3-0 and 4-1. And I think he was trying to get his team to respond.
Final one for Pierre. This is the coach of the Philadelphia Flyers.
It's tough to predict a young guy coming in and having that type of impact offensively, you know, in this league. But you know, Ghost, he's done it from, you know, right from his, you know, his first day with us. He's been a confident player. He's been a good teammate, and he's, you know, he's worked hard at all areas of his game. Obviously, the offensive side is what brings the spotlight.
Well, at least the nickname is Ghost and not Ghosty.
No, but he is a ghost on the ice, too, because you don't see him until he shoots it. He's slippery. There's a little bit of Ribeiro in him. Do you know how Mike's really slippery?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
There's a little bit of that in Ghost.
Is this what he was projected to do this quickly?
Yeah. I've been telling you about him for a few years. Absolutely. Coming out of Union, he was the MVP of the NCAA tournament. And ironically enough, that's when Union won it in Philadelphia at Wells Fargo. So he actually won the NCAA tournament and was the MVP in Philadelphia, where the tournament was played, and he eventually obviously plays for that team. But no, this is great. I didn't even think of this till just now. I did a Princeton Union game, Gostisbehere's playing, and Condon's the goalie for Princeton during the lockout, Doc Emmerich and I from Hobey Baker Arena. And one of the guys that sat with us upstairs was Braden Colburn, because his brother played for Union at the time. So it was kind of neat. So I remember that now, but he's always been like that. He's a transfer. The one thing I've warned you, and I'll tell you again, Philadelphia may not be a playoff team this year, but man, oh man, buckle up, because if you think Gostisbehere is good, wait till Travis Sanheim and Samuel Morin get to the NHL. Wait till Ivan Provorov gets to the NHL. They have a killer lineup of young defensemen coming into the league. You'll see. They're going to be dangerous, very dangerous, Philadelphia.
We're down to about 20 seconds.
Okay, I know you have questions. I want to say two things.
Hold
very
on.
Important.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, for Lac St. Louis and John Goyens, congratulations. Mike Matheson.
That's where I was going.
Okay, good. Well, way to go. Mike Matheson's going to play in the NHL, called up from San Antonio, or wherever they are now. Where is their team now? Oh, Portland, Maine. Portland, Maine they are. Just off the top of my head, they used to be in San Antonio. He's the former captain of Boston College, great Lac St. Louis Lion. He's going to play in the NHL. I could not be more proud of Mike. Could not be more proud of him. What a good man. What a great kid. His father should be so proud of him, his whole family. He's an awesome, awesome human being. And the other one is, how about Harper Lee passing away, the author of To Kill a Mockingbird?
Oh, I'm very impressed, Pierre.
No, she's Atticus Finch. Yeah. I was an English major in college. That was a must-read. And for anybody out there, To Kill a Mockingbird is a must-read. She had a good life, though, Mitch. 89
years old. Yeah, I was about to say, I hope the Matheson family is listening here. So all the best to Mike tomorrow
you
night
know what?
For Florida.
I remember the recruitment of him so well. Mike Cavanaugh was the assistant coach at BC along with Greg Brown. Greg Brown was a second-round pick of the Buffalo Sabres, played a little bit in the NHL, was a really good international player for the Americans and played overseas in Europe. He's still at Boston College. I remember the recruitment process like it was yesterday, and I watched them play, and I told Cavanaugh and Brown, I said, you guys don't get a lot of players out of Quebec. You got to get this guy. You got to get this guy. He's really good.
And to paraphrase Michel Therrien, trust me on this, as great as the movie was with Gregory Peck, you have to read the book.
Oh, you have to read that book. My little boy just read it, and he was addicted to it, little Ryan. He's like, Dad, this book's awesome. I'm like, yeah, it is. It's really good.
Have a great weekend, Pierre. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for an awesome week, Mitch. Thanks a lot. And how's Tony feeling, Marinaro?
Tony?
Yeah.
Tony's good.
Better than ever, Pierre, trust me.
Hey, Jay, I was on Boston radio yesterday, and they love to listen to Tony because I think Tony does some hits with them during the playoffs whenever Montreal and Boston play. And they were worried about Tony yesterday. And I said, I haven't heard of him.
When I walked into the studio yesterday, there were shreds of a local paper on the floor. So I think he got it out of his system.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure he was okay, because I'm a big Tony Marinaro fan. But I just wanted to make sure, because I'm Boston Radio, they're saying your buddy Tony's in a little bit of hot water today. He's a little bit mad.
He's fine.
He's fine. Good. Way to go, Tony. Hang in there. Have a great weekend, everybody.